Happy that we're continuing it. I sent the source sheet to the chat for those who want to grab it from there. I'm also going to screen share so we can look on together. And of course, you do what works for you. Everything is great by me. I want to begin by taking a moment to just ask everyone, I guess before we even get to the Maamar Makomos, and I asked this of some of the members of our shul this past Shabbos, to just take a minute and to pause and to think about how you got to the moment you're in right now. I want you to think about, just to close your eyes, you can keep your eyes open, whatever you're comfortable with, to take a couple of seconds and just reflect on how you got literally to the moment that you're sitting in at this very moment. To think about it in terms of where you were born, where you were raised, where you went to school, where you didn't go to school, the friends you made or the friends you didn't make, the relationships that you developed or the ones that you didn't, the summer camp that you went to or the camp that you didn't,
This meeting
the
is being
seminary
recorded.
that you went to or didn't, and just to think about all the twists and turns of life, the people who inspired you and directly impacted your life. And what we're going to talk about in part today are the people who impact our lives that we don't even know about, that we're not even fully aware of the hashpah, the influence that they had on our lives. And some of those people are actually remarkable people of our collective Jewish history. Let's begin with source number one, with a medrash. I want to learn about a woman, a remarkable woman. We're going to learn about two unbelievable Jewish women today. But beginning with a woman who maybe we've never heard of, perhaps you've heard a little bit of her story. And it's a medrash that's found in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which is one of the earlier midrashic works that we have, describing the experience of the Jews in Mitzrayim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, if we look in source number one, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Nog se paro hayumakin es Yisrael. Let's try. I always feel that, Pesach time and when we learn these parshios, it's so important to make Mitzrayim real. It's so easy for it to just be this Disney movie, this like fairy tale, this thing that never really happened. These were real people. These were real men and women and children, young and old, who were suffering in Mitzrayim. People who spent their entire life in Mitzrayim. Individuals whose whole life, they were born in Mitzrayim, they lived in Mitzrayim, they suffered in Mitzrayim, they died in Mitzrayim. Not necessarily even that select group that was able to emerge from Mitzrayim. So Rabbi Akiva wants us to picture the Nog Se Paro Hayumakin Es Yisrael. Picture a Jew suffering under the whip, under the oppression of an Egyptian taskmaster. Kedei lasos lahem tochen levenim, demanding of a Jew to produce that daily portion of bricks that needed to be created. Umitzrayim lo hayu nosnin tevin liYisrael. We know the Egyptians at one point stopped, at the command of Paro, stopped providing even the straw to make the bricks, the raw materials. And the Jewish people were working, and they were working, and they went out to the fields, hayu Yisrael mekosheshim, in the third line, as akashma midbar. The Jews would go out, and they would gather the straw and the stubble in the wilderness. And they didn't have any tools. How do you turn it into mortar? How do you turn it into bricks? Hayu romsin oso? They would crush it, b'chamoreyem, v'nesheyem, u'b'neyem. They would take their animals, the men, their wives, their children, would all go out to the field. They would gather the straw, the stubble, whatever it was, the raw materials. And they were romsin, they were crushing it with their feet, trampling the straw, trying to reduce it to some type of paste, to make it into some type of brick. And the sharp ends were poking, were stabbing them in their feet. And the blood would drip from their feet into the mortar, mixing in with the cement that they were producing. And then the Medrash tells us a story of a particular woman. It's one thing to talk about the collective suffering of the Jewish people. It's another thing to hone in on a particular person's story. We don't know too many individual stories of Jews who suffered in Mitzrayim. But the Medrash tells us one. Rachel bas Bito shel Shuselach. Anyone know who that is? You've heard of her before. You've met her before. If you have the Gadi Palak Haggadah with the really cool pictures, so it's actually a very painful picture. This picture is in that Haggadah of a woman immersed up to her waist or so in cement, trying to prepare these bricks, and you see she's reaching up with her hands to Shemayim, screaming out. It's based on this Medrash. The Medrash says that Rachel bas Bito shel Shuselach haysahara laledes, a pregnant woman engaged in the backbreaking labor of preparing these bricks. She's trampling, she's preparing the cement along with her husband, V'yatza havlad mitoch mea, and she gave birth, literally into the cement. A child emerged without any the comforts of a proper doctor, or a hospital bed, or anesthesia, and the like. This poor woman, she gave birth amongst her fellow Jews without any privacy, and she gives birth into the mud, into the mortar, into the cement. V'yatza havlad mitoch mea, v'nisari b'soch hamalbein. And that child, that young child, emerges from her womb and lands in the cement and is formed into a brick. It's Nisari B'soch HaMalbein. And the child immediately is killed. V'olsa tzakosa lifnei kisei hakavod. And as any normal human being would, although more so a woman who had suffered as much as she had probably in the course of her experience in Mitzrayim, she let out a heart-wrenching scream. Lifnei kisei hakavod, her sounds went up, her cries went up before Hashem. Yorad Michal hamalach velokach es hamalbein. The malach Michal, the great defendant, the defending, protecting angel of Klal Yisrael, descended from on high, grabbed that brick from amongst the cement. V'halo lifnei kisei hakavod, and lifted it up before HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne. V'oso halayla, and that night, it wasn't literally that night, because, of course, if this was taking place, it was still prior to the Makos had begun. But on that night, the Mefarshim explained, 1 year later, on that night, that same time, when this occurred, exactly 1 year later, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Nigla HaKadosh Baruch Hu vehika kol bechorei Mitzrayim. 1 year later, at that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to take the Jews out and made the Egyptians pay. This woman who had lost her child, her heart, her gut-wrenching scream, her cry, pierced the heavens, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided at that moment, this is going to be the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, this is going to be Makas Bechoros. Here is a woman, Rachel Basbito Shel Shusalach. We know so little about her. We know so little about her. Somehow Chazal have this tradition of this story. And yet it was her cry, it was her pain, it was her sacrifice for us, it was her suffering that got us out of Mitzrayim. And got out of Mitzrayim also means that it was with that effort that Klal Yisrael emerged from Mitzrayim. We're chosen as Hashem's people. Kriyas Yamsuf, we come to Kabbalah Satorah. So many things that follow suit after Hashem hears the cry of this poor woman. And it got me thinking, when I was thinking about this Medrash, in light of this coming week's Parsha, again, when we actually learn the story of Makos Bechoros, and last week's Parsha, as the Makos begin to unfold, I was thinking about those Jews in Mitzrayim. We don't know who they are. We know so little about them. And I was thinking about the sacrifices that they made for us. And do we appreciate that? And are we in turn making sacrifices for the next generation as well? I started rereading, I hope some of you have read it, if you haven't, it's such a great book. The Prime Minister, Yehuda Avner, who passed away about 5 years ago. He was an Israeli diplomat who worked alongside many of Israel's prime ministers. An amazing book. And in one of the early chapters, he tells the story of a woman named Esther Kallengold. Esther Kallengold was a young woman born in 1925 in London. She studied to be an English teacher and was also a woman who was raised in a home with a great love of Eretz Yisrael. Her father was one of the founders of Poland's young Mizrahi movement. And she said before she even knew how to speak, she had a fierce love of Eretz Yisrael. And there was something that was inculcated in her home. So in 1946, she's 21 years old, she decides she wants to travel to, it was before the State of Israel, to travel to Eretz Yisrael at that time. She applied for a teaching position as an English teacher in the Rothschild School in Jerusalem, and she decides, I'm going. And she comes to Eretz Yisrael, 1946. December 1946, she comes to Yerushalayim. You can imagine what's happening at the time. Things were very, very tense. And as time goes on, she sees the growing violence, the intense fighting. The British are still in the land. The Arabs are ready to attack on all sides. By 1947, she decides, I can't sit by and watch anymore. I need to do something. And with unbelievable self-sacrifice, she decides to join the Haganah. By 1948, early 1948, January 1948, she had abandoned her position as a teacher and decides to go full force to become a soldier. A soldier of the earliest forms of the Israeli army. 1948, the Jewish quarter in Yerushalayim had about 1,700 people in it. The British in May are getting ready to pull out of Israel. The Arabs are ready to attack. On May 7th in 1948, she makes her way into the old city of Yerushalayim, understanding full well what that means. It means full well that she may never emerge from the old city of Yerushalayim. The British pull out on May 14th, and the fighting immediately ensues. And here she is, this young woman. Think of her. She's about some of your age. A 22-year-old girl who decides to become a soldier. And she has a gun in her hand, and she's defending the old city of Yerushalayim. And they're totally outmanned. They're totally ill-prepared. And she's fighting, and she's fighting, and she's fighting. May 16th, in the early days of the fighting, she's injured. She's able to recover. She goes back to fighting. On May 26th, she enters a building. A bomb explodes, shattering her spine. And that becomes the end of Esther Kallenbach. She's still alive. For the next couple of days, she held on. May 28th, the surrender takes place. By May 29th, the morning of May 29th, 5 a.m., she had passed away. A young woman, 22 years old, with her whole life ahead of her, a bright woman, an intelligent young woman, a passionate young woman, and yet she made that awesome sacrifice. And I think it was clear to her. She understood the stakes when she went into the old city of Yerushalayim in May of 1948. And about 6 days before she passed away, as the fighting was intensifying, and she understood that she may never see her parents or siblings or any of her friends again, she wrote a last letter to her family, which was preserved, which made it to her father. She handed it off to a fellow female soldier, and eventually it made it back to her parents in London. And it's printed in Yehuda Avner's book, The Prime Minister's. And here's what she wrote. Listen to this letter. It's unbelievable. Dear Mummy and Daddy and everybody, if you get this at all, it will be, I suppose, typical of all my hurried, messy letters. I am writing it to beg of you that whatever may have happened to me, you will make the effort to take it in the spirit that I want, and to understand that for myself I have no regrets. We have had a bitter fight. I've tasted Gehenna, but it has been worthwhile because I'm quite convinced that the end will see a Jewish state and the realization of our longings. In other words, she understood I'm a link in the chain, and I'm prepared to make sacrifices so that people in the future can have a better life, can have a better existence. I shall be only one of the many who fell in sacrifice. And I was urged to write this because one in particular was killed today who meant a great deal to me. Because of the sorrow I felt, I want you to take it otherwise, to remember that we were soldiers and had the greatest and noblest cause to fight for. Hashem is with us. God is with us. I know in His holy city, and I am proud and ready to pay the price it may cost us to reprieve it. Don't think I have taken unnecessary risks. That does not pay when the manpower is short. I hope you may have a chance of meeting any of my co-fighters who survive if I do not, and that you will be pleased and not sad of how they talk of me. Please, please do not be sadder than you can help. Imagine writing to her parents. I have lived my life fully, if briefly, and I think this is the best way, short and sweet. Very sweet it has been here in our land. I hope you shall enjoy from Mimi and Asher, her two siblings, the satisfaction you missed in me. Let it be... Where did I go? Let it be without regret, and then I too shall be happy. I am thinking of all of you, every single one of you in the family, and I am full of pleasure at the thought that you will one day, very soon I hope, come and enjoy the fruits of that which we are fighting. Much, much love, be happy, and remember me in happiness. Shalom and lehitraot, your loving Esther. And Yehuda Avner ends that chapter, a chapter dedicated to the life story of a woman whose life story could have been totally lost to Jewish history and to world history, Esther Kallenbach. He ends the chapter by saying, I know the story well because Esther, I ended up marrying Esther's sister, Mimi. She became my wife of many years, and her brother, Asher, became one of my dearest friends. The story of a woman who sacrificed so that other people could have a better life. And again, how many stories, if we just think about it, how many stories throughout history are lost to history? How many individuals, how many sacrifices of previous generations? Again, go back to what I asked you to do at the beginning of this year, to just think for a couple of minutes about people who've shaped your lives. Think about the great-great-great-grandparents you never met and the choices that they made over the course of their lifetime and how it influenced you to this day. Think about the people who you know have directly influenced you and have sacrificed to be able to allow you to have the life that you have today. Think about the story of the Tzvardeya in Mitzrayim. Let's go back to last week's Parsha. We know the second of the Makos, the story of the frogs, a fascinating Makkah. For some reason, Makkah Tzvardeya always captures my attention. to think about the frogs being sent, an army of frogs being sent into the homes of the Egyptians at the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really what it was. Almost like an army of frogs, soldiers, valiant soldiers, carrying out the Dvar Hashem, and also making unbelievable sacrifices. The Psukim read that we read this past Shabbos, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, source number 3, Parshas Va'era. Bo el paro va'amarte lov ko amar Hashem. Shalach es ami ve'avduni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please allow the Jewish people to go and serve me. Ve'imayin atal l'shaleach hanei anochi nogev as gvulcha b'tzvardeim. I will send across the borders my soldiers, those brave frogs. Vishara tayaur tzvardeim va'alu ubalu b'beisecha. They'll enter your homes. They'll enter your bedrooms. They'll enter your beds. They'll enter every bit of your home, and they'll enter into your ovens. They'll enter into your kneading bowls. The tzvardeim will take over your lives. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim tells us about a drasha that Todus Ish Romi, of Theodos, the man of Rome, once said the following drasha. Ma ra'u Chananya Mishal va'Azaria shemasru atzman al kedushas Hashem lekivshan ha'esh. We know that Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azaria, with great sacrifice, with great self-sacrifice, decided to die al Kiddush Hashem, to give their lives rather than abandon their Yiddishkeit. And where did they derive that inspiration? Who was their source of inspiration? Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azaria, who learned Daf Yomi, just learned recently, Nasu Kal V'chomer. They made the following Kal V'chomer. They said, well, if the frogs are prepared, if a frog who's not even Jewish, a frog who's not even a Baal Bechira in the way that we are, doesn't have the free will, certainly doesn't have the neshama that each of us have been invested with. If a frog which is not prepared and not really commanded to die al Kiddush Hashem was prepared to enter into the ovens by choice, to die al Kiddush Hashem in fulfillment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. So Hanani, Mishael, Va'azaria said about themselves, so what about us? Al achas kama v'kama. All the more so we should be prepared to make that sacrifice. They were inspired by the frogs. The frogs, particularly those frogs, not the frogs that went into the beds, not the frogs that went into the homes, but the frogs that went into the ovens, who went into the ovens and died al Kiddush Hashem. The Vilna Gaon, and it's elaborated on in the Sefer Darchei Musar of Yaakov Naiman, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael of the previous generation, he asked the following simple question. He said, you know, Hananiah, Mishael, Va'azaria, the derivation that they had from the frogs, it doesn't really add up if you actually think about it for a second. The Gemara again told us, Hanani Mishael Va'azaria said, well, if the frogs weren't commanded to die al Kiddush Hashem, and they were prepared to do so, so we, fine Jews, who are commanded to make the ultimate sacrifice if necessary, al achas kama v'kama. The frogs didn't have to go into the ovens, so therefore we should also be prepared, willingly, to give our lives. Asks Rav Yaakov Naiman in the Darchei Musar, I don't understand. Ulechore kasha, he asks in the third line of source number 5. Hare hatzvardeim nitztavu lichones latanorim. The frogs were not commanded to die al Kiddush Hashem. Let's go back to a pasuk in Chumash we just read a moment ago. The pasuk clearly says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go tell Paro that I'm going to send my frogs, and they will enter your homes, they will enter your bedrooms, they will enter your beds. Not only your homes, the home of your servants. Uva amcha, uvitanu rechov mesharo secha. They will enter the ovens, they will enter the kneading bowls. So what do you mean the frogs were not commanded to do so? The frogs clearly were commanded. Hari atzvardim nitztavu lichanes latanorim. They were in fact commanded, more so than Hanani, Mishael, Va'azaria. They chose to give their life al Kiddush Hashem. The frogs were absolutely commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he offers a very powerful answer. And it's an answer that I think we have to think about every day of our life. We have to think about this on a daily basis. What am I prepared to do when I'm not necessarily forced or called upon to do so? Aval ha-teiretu. The frogs were nitztavu lichanes betanurim. Yes, it's true, the frogs as a collective, some frogs were going to need to enter into the ovens. That was part of the general command of Hashem. But some frogs were told to go into beds. And some frogs were told to go into rooms. And some frogs were told to go into kneading bowls. So each and every frog could have excused itself and said, I'll prefer to be a frog who just enters into the house. You be the frog that goes into the oven and gives its life in order to reveal Hashem in the world, in the homes of the Mitzrayim. There were no individual frogs that were commanded per se to make that ultimate sacrifice. And yet there were some frogs that decided on their own, I'm not going to let someone else do that mitzvah. I'm going to be the one to make that sacrifice. Esther Kallengold could have said, I have my whole life ahead of me. I'll let someone else go fight for the old city of Yerushalayim. Rachel Bas Shuselach didn't really have a choice to give birth to that child, as the Medrash painted that painful picture of giving birth to that child into the cement. But when she cries out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hears? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond? It was just one of countless stories. Apparently there was some type of sacrifice that she was making in that cry. There was some recognition of that sacrifice that pierced the heavens. Hanani Mishal Vazariah said, you know what? There were frogs that didn't have to, but they did. They chose to make that sacrifice. And therefore, you know what? Maybe we could find a way to get out of this, but maybe we can also find a way to opt in, to make that sacrifice, to make a point for future generations, to make that sacrifice. That's a remarkable thing, and it's something that we have to think about, both in terms of an appreciation for the sacrifices that have been made for us, and also to ask ourselves, what sacrifices am I going to make? What am I going to offer the next generation? Says Rav Yaakov Naiman, Mikan tzrichem anachnu lilmod. Don't look for ways to circumvent the mitzvah. Look for ways to obligate yourself. Look for ways to get involved. It's an important lesson to think about at the beginning of a hard semester, in a time which is very unusual. It's a lot easier to focus on oneself and to not ask, what can I do for the tzibur? Especially in light of the craziness of our world currently. But I could also be a person who says, you know what? I'm going to make a sacrifice. It may be a sacrifice that people know about one day, or it may not. I want to do something to influence the future. Because whatever's happening now, there's going to be a future. There's going to be a world beyond my world. And I want to leave a mark on this world. I want to be able to do something for someone down the road. The same way that someone who came before me did something for me. Says Rav Yaakov Naiman, look to do the mitzvah. V'lo lidchos al acher. Don't look for someone else to do the mitzvah for you. He says, sometimes a person, he's writing to Bnei Yeshiva, sometimes a person is sitting and learning, and a chesed opportunity comes their way, right? And a person says, well, someone else can get involved. Someone else can be involved in that chesed project. I have too many other responsibilities. I have a hard semester. I'm taking difficult classes. I don't have the time. Or I'm already involved in too many other things. Don't look for ways to excuse oneself. Look for ways to obligate oneself. Look for ways for a person to get involved. What does this have to do with the month of Shvat in which we find ourselves? You know, Shvat is a time where we think about planting and we think about things growing. Of course, we celebrate Tu B'Shvat about a week away. I'll just mention, I can't not mention, since today is the inauguration of the 46th President of the United States, President Joe Biden, I have to share with you a story that took place on January 20th, 1989. January 20th, 1989, at the inauguration of the 41st president, George H.W. Bush. It's such a great story, I have to share it with you. It's a Tu B'Shvat story. Rav Chaskel Besser, I don't know if that name is familiar, was the rabbi on 84th Street. Amazing personality. There's a beautiful biography that was written about him by a journalist. Rav Chaskel Besser was one of the rabbinic figures who was invited to the inauguration of George H.W. Bush. And he showed up a little bit early. He got to his seat a little bit early that day. And he had with him his little pocket Gemara. And he's sitting there and he's learning. I guess there was a section for clergy, you know, for rabbis and priests. And he said two cardinals, not the birds, two cardinals sit down next to him. And they see that the rabbi is studying the Talmud. So they say to him, oh, rabbi, we see that you're reading the Talmud. You know, we've heard from some of our Jewish friends that everything is in the Talmud. So Rabbi Besser says, yes, the Talmud talks about everything. Yes, the Talmud is an unbelievable wellspring of wisdom. The Talmud speaks of everything. So they say to him, they say, Rabbi, does the Talmud speak about inaugurations? So Rav Chaskel Besser thinks for a moment. He says, the Talmud does speak about inaugurations. He says, you know, in the Talmud, it talks about, most people think of New Year's being a single day of the year. But in the Jewish experience, we have many New Years. We have many inaugurations. We have many starting points. The Mishnah at the beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah describes different New Years. And he says to them, he says, you know, actually, one of our New Years comes in tonight. The New Year of the trees. We call it Tu B'Shvat. And he says to the cardinals, the New Year for the trees includes bushes as well. On the inauguration of George Bush. He said, yes, the Talmud has something to say about inaugurations. What an amazing and clever answer for a person to come up with on the spot. So we're standing a week away from Tu B'Shvat. We're thinking about inaugurations. We're thinking about things growing, new things. Right? We're thinking about a past. We're thinking about what's going to be in the future. Says the Chiddushei Harim. You know what Tu B'Shvat is? The first Ger Rebbe. You know what Tu B'Shvat celebrates? Tu B'Shvat celebrates something that happened a few months ago. It's our first taste of something that happened, something that we worked hard to prepare a few months earlier. Look what he writes. He has a sefer called the Sefer HaZchus by the first Ger Rebbe. He says, Tu B'Shvat we know is Rosh Hashanah Li'ilan. But the Gemara tells us, She'ilan shechanat kodem Tu B'Shvat, hu mimei gishamim shel shana hakodemes kodem Rosh Hashanah. If you see a flower, if you see something that starts to grow, last week or this week, if you see something starting to bud or to blossom, so that comes from rains that was already from before Rosh Hashanah. And if you see something that starts to blossom achar Tu B'Shvat, hu mimei gishamim she'achar Rosh Hashanah. That's from the rain of this new year. Since Tishrei, since Aleph Tishrei, Tafshin Pei Aleph, the influence of those rains is starting to bring new fruits, new things into the world. Explains the Chiddushei Harim. Tu B'Shvat is when we first start to recognize, it's our first revelation with our physical eyes that the rain is starting through the natural process to produce new fruits. It's that on a spiritual level, everything that we worked on in Rosh Hashanah is finally starting to reveal itself in the world. Look how he describes it. Umavuar de geshamim nikram kol mine shefa hayorid mishamayim. Geshem doesn't just mean the physical reality of rain. Geshem means any influx of holiness, any shefa, any energy that is descending upon the world. V'chayim hanigzor b'Rosh Hashanah k'fi zuchos hador. Whatever we, as we stood collectively and individually in shul this past Rosh Hashanah, and it was a very unusual Rosh Hashanah for many of us, and we davened, and we hoped, and now we're starting to see the fruits of our labor. All of a sudden, that Shefa Chaim, Hahu Nigmar b'Rosh Hashanah ad Shmini Atzeres, that which we were negotiating at the beginning of the year, negotiating for life, negotiating not only for physical life, but spiritual life, all of a sudden now, it's starting to be offered out to the world, starting to be revealed in the world. He says, Hein beruchnias parnasa sarchei ha-nefesh. That's true seeing the spiritual fruits of our efforts from Rosh Hashanah. Hein begashmi. And that's true in our spirit, in our physical efforts to be able to see things starting to unfold. The new year is starting to really happen at this point. Vaschalas hisgalus ha-shefa hu b'Tu B'Shvat. And the beginning of that revelation, when we first start to see it with our eyes, is on Tu B'Shvat. We start to recognize that, you know what, the choices that were made in the past actually are influencing us right here, right now. And again, we become that centerpiece, looking back and looking forward, appreciating the things that we did for ourselves in the past, and certainly appreciating the things that others did for us in the past, and maybe even trying to recognize the efforts of those who we never met and we never even realized what they did for us, and then asking ourselves, how am I going to do the same to try to make the world better for the person who comes next? The Gemara tells the story of Choni HaMagel. Choni HaMagel was an interesting character. He went to sleep, he woke up 70 years later. But the Gemara tells a story how Choni HaMagel was walking one time. Gemara in Tanis in source number 7, Choni HaMagel was out for a stroll. Yom achad hava ozel be'orcha. Choni HaMagel was out for a walk. And as he's walking, chozi lahahu gavra davei nota charuva. He saw a person, a gavra, an individual, who was planting a carob tree. Amar lei, hai ad kama shnin ta'in. How long will it take for this carob tree to be laden with carob, to be filled with fruit? You're just planting a seed now. How long will it take till you're able to see the fruits of your labor? Amar lei ad shivin shnin. It'll take about 70 years. So Choni HaMagel says to him, Amar lei, pshita lecha dechai is shivin shnin? Are you so confident? You don't look like such a young person. Are you so sure you're going to be around in 70 years from now? Clearly you're planting this tree for yourself. Amar lei hahi hai gavra, the man said back to him, listen to this line, it's such a beautiful line. He said, Alma b'charuva ashkachte. I found an alma, an olam, I found a world that was filled with carob. Where did the carob trees that I'm enjoying right now, where did those come from? It must be that someone planted for me. So I need to plant for the next generation as well. Ki hechi deshosle li avasai, just like my ancestors planted for me, Shasli nami libarai, I'm planting for my children. I'm planting for the next generation. That's how a Jew lives their life, with an eye towards the past and an eye towards the future. Sometimes we don't know the full story of the past. Again, if not for this medrash, we never would have realized that Makas Bechoros was the response to this one woman's cry. And again, the story of Esther Kahlengold, and to hear it in her own words, a letter that she wrote 6 days before she left this world, the sacrifice that she made that there should be a state of Israel, that we would be able to enjoy, to fight for the old city of Yerushalayim, with such Mesiras Nefesh. How can we ever thank such a woman? A woman who's buried on Har Herzl. Maybe that's how we could thank her. We can go and pay our respects to her. Right? And how about those frogs? How about those frogs that decided on their own to enter into the ovens when they didn't have to? They could have left it for someone else to do. And how Hanani, Mishael, Azariah looked to those frogs as a source of inspiration. Or Choni HaMagil, who learned the lesson in talking to this fellow in the Gemara that we just learned. This person who was able to say, my ancestors did for me, and I'm going to do for the future generations. Let's end with a pasuk in Yirmiyah and a mashal that is brought by one of the Gaonim, in the Chuvas of the Gaonim, in the Shailos and Chuvas, the response to literature of the Gaonim. The pasuk says in Yirmiyah, it's describing the end of days. A time will come, by Yamim Ahim lo yom ro'od avos achlu bosar, vishine vonim tikena. A time will come when people will no longer say, avos achlu bosar, that the parents ate sour grapes, vishine vonim, and the teeth of their children were set on edge. A time will come, the Navi Yirmiyah says, when Hashem is going to clean up the world, and in a future the children will no longer suffer for the bad choices of the parents. A person will be able to be held accountable for their own efforts. Right? But right now we live in a world where there's a cause and effect in a very direct way. That the choices that were made in previous generations caused us to get to here. And the choices we're making now are going to set the tone for the future generation. In the Tshuva Sagaonim, in a little volume called Shari Tshuva, a tshuva from Rav Haigon, all the way back from the 10th century, Rav Haigon says that there's many mashalim that are attributed to Rabbi Meir. Most of them are lost. But we have one such mashal, and I want to share it with you. He tells the mashal of a lion that stumbles upon a fox. And the lion is about to consume the fox. When the clever fox says to the lion, hold on a second, don't eat me. I will not satisfy your hunger. Let me show you someone who you can enjoy. He says, come with me. So the fox leads the lion along a path, and he shows him a person who seems to be lying in ambush. The lion's a little bit nervous. He's not sure if he's going to be able to attack this man. And the fox goads him on and says, no, don't worry, attack this man. Don't worry, enjoy. There's much more meat on this guy than there is on me. And the lion says to the fox, but I'm nervous. I'm nervous it's not going to work out. What if something happens to me? He says, nothing's going to happen to you. You're much stronger than this man. Nothing's going to happen to you. And if you're worried that what? That maybe one of his relatives is going to try to get revenge on you? Nah, you don't have to worry about it. Maybe in some future generation, men will get, mad at lions and try to harm lions. But right now, enjoy, eat, enjoy. Enjoy what's in front of you. Anyways, the lion pounces, the lion jumps, and falls into a trap, falls into a pit. And the fox comes over, and he starts laughing at the lion. Oh, you foolish lion. And the lion says to him, where it's bolded in the final source, Va'amar lo ha'ari, halo amarta li she'ena paranas bo'alecha. You told me nothing's going to happen to me. You told me if anything's going to happen, maybe in future generations. Maybe somewhere down the road, some hunter will get revenge against some lion. But I have nothing to worry about. So what happened here? How did I get trapped? And the fox turns to him and he says, Kvar yesh avon alavi avicha sha'ata nitvas bo. Well, maybe your grandfather said the same thing when he tried to attack the man. And maybe now you're suffering because of the bad choices that he made. Amr lo ari, the lion said to the fox, paraphrasing this pasuk, the lesson of this pasuk in Yirmiyah, Avos achlu bosar, when the earlier generations ate the unripe grapes, ate the sour grapes, the children pay the price. Shine vanim tikena. Says the fox, Lama lo chashavta kein mi b'rishona. You were prepared to sell out the future generations. Why didn't you think about it before now? V'kama kama mine musar yesh b'mashal zu. There are so many lessons to extract from this mashal. To realize again, if things are working out for us, the good things we have in life, so many decisions were made beforehand that got us to this point. And we have to try to be thankful and appreciative of that. And again, we have to challenge ourselves each day of our life. And it's a very much a lesson of the Parshios of Va'era and Bo, And it's very much a lesson of the month of Shvat, to be able to plant seeds for future generations, to plant carob trees that future generations will be able to enjoy, to make a difference in Stern College, so that maybe someone in a generation from now will be able to benefit from a program that you created, or an initiative that you started, to do something to leave the world a better place. That's the challenge to each and every one of us. So Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us. Again, we're living in very uncertain times. It would be much nicer if we were all together back in person, learning together as we did for many, many years. And I hope that we'll be Zocha at some point this year. I hope to be able to come and give some shiurim in person. But in a world that is still so uncertain, the past is uncertain, the future is uncertain, but we have to try our best to reflect on the past and to look with a sensitive and an eye towards the future to try to build something beautiful for the next generation. And Hashem should help us to be successful in achieving those goals. Thank you all for being here. Have a great day. Have a great semester. And look forward to learning again. Mirtz Hashem. Thank you so much.